Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
There it is! When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to ELC. Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're putting up the holiday decoration, maybe you're sitting by the fire, the hearth in your home, just putting on the old DLC and putting the ornaments on the tree or just getting ready for the season. It is that time. It's getting close. Maybe people don't do it until after Thanksgiving. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of Game of Goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our patrons over at patreon.com/DLCpod. These fine folks bring the show to you. Their support, their generosity, their commitment means that we get to keep making DLC episodes, and we are grateful for that. Thank you, patrons, for making this show possible. If you are listening to this and you're thinking to yourself, you know what? I like this show. I'd like to see it continue. I want to be a patron as well. Well, I have good news for you. You get some cool stuff in return should you choose to support the show, including ad-free versions of the show, a video version of the show on demand, although not this week, and tons of bonus content, ladies and gentlemen. Tons of bonus content. You got two seasons of Feeling This, where Christian Spicer and Alex Solman talk about the feelings behind video games, digging in deep on all the various aspects of what in video games, what make them great. Also, you've got the audio podcast version of the DLC Book Club, where Lana Bashinsky and myself talking about the Melazin Book of the Fallen by Steven Erickson. So much fun. Talking about reading and books in general. That's a blast. Also, patrons get the Wednesday bonus show we call Paid DLC. That is where Lana Bashinsky, Christian Spicer, and myself talk about your comments. We have a prompt every week just for patrons. It's a two-way street, talking to patrons, talking with patrons about all sorts of off-topic topics. It's a blast, and you can get it exclusively by supporting the show at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games and their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also, dice-looking cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Canada, spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined usually by Christian Spicer, but not this week. Christian is a traveling, and so that means we got to go to the one, the only.
Who's that coming on the podcast today?
Ladies and gentlemen, GameRant.com's own Anthony Taormina. Hi, Anthony. How are you?
Hi, Jeff. It's good to be here. Stepping in for Christian.
Yeah, you stepped in for me a few weeks ago. Now you stepped in for Christian. Our go-to guy, as the song says, dependable, commendable, and so sincere.
Yeah, and that day that I was stepping in for Christian, stepping in for you, I thought I was stepping in for Christian, and then you bait and switched me.
We pulled the old switcheroo on you. Yeah, that's true. I was feeling sick. Yes. And we thought Christian wasn't going to be able to make it. And then at the last minute, he was able to make it. And then he said, you're sick. Why don't you sit out? And it all worked out. But anyway, I'm glad I get a little Taormina time.
Yeah, because, I'm in.
I'm excited to hear you've been playing everything that I haven't, as usual. So I'm very excited to hear you talking about COD and a certain VR game later.
Yes, but we
also have a great guest. You know, the DLC always stands for Downloadable Kanata. Usually stands for your downloadable Christian. But this week, I am excited. I can't even speak. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so excited. That's how excited I am, is that my face stopped working. Because DLC, once again, stands for dads who love consoles. Because from Mega Dads, our friend Adam Leonard is back with us. Hey, Adam, how are you?
Hey, it's great to be here. We're in the week of Thanksgiving. You know, I feel like I'm an extended part of the DLC family. I podcast with you and Christian. I was even on a show with Lana. Now I'm on a show with Anthony. Like, I really feel like you guys are my second dysfunctional family. So it's great to be here.
I am honored to be dysfunctional with anybody at this point.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, you are absolutely part of the family. And, you know, these weeks when Christian's out and I've been traveling and it's a little crazy and chaos, I reach out to the friends that I know will be dependable and awesome. And I know we'll have a great show. So that's why you guys are here. Because
signal goes up in the sky. And I'm like, oh, man, signal. It's my time to shine.
The dad signal. Yeah. It's just a sad, lonely man in silhouette.
Let's sit in our basements together.
It's a pair of underwear.
All right, guys. We got a lot to get to. We got a lot to talk about. Let's jump right in and start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send us comments or questions or anything you'd like us to know. We love hearing from you. dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also get a hold of us and the community, be part of the community, by visiting our Discord, which is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Really awesome folks hanging out, talking about all sorts of cool stuff. Get in there, become part of the community. But Adam, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Well, this is a recent development, and it kind of fits in with a little teaser here, the game that I've been playing. But this is like the era of remakes, remasters, reheated games. And Naughty Dog and PlayStation have announced that the long-rumored Last of Us Part 2 is getting remastered for PS5. Might not be the most sexy remaster since the game's only a couple years old, but this is a game that I've been wanting to go back to. And so personally, I'm really excited to see this, because why not play the game in the best way possible? And part of this remaster is that they're offering it with, it's just $10 to upgrade to the new version with the new bells and whistles and things like that. So I'm pretty pumped for The Last of Us Part 2 remastered on PS5.
I think that point that you noted there at the end is the one I'm most happy to see, which is if you already own Last of Us Part 2, it's $10 to upgrade it. I think that is the best news of this announcement as far as I'm concerned, because I think, you know, the folks that want to double dip, it doesn't feel so painful. And maybe this is the way that folks who've never played it before or just got on board because of the HBO show and are like, oh, this Last of Us thing, I wonder where the story goes after the show ended.
Yeah.
They get a chance to see it in the best possible version on PlayStation 5. I think that's cool. I was, you know, we talked about this when it was heavily rumored and it was kind of swirling. And I was worried that it was going to feel like this real double dip. And it may still. Yep. But I think that sting is blunted by the fact that, you know, they're allowing this path to upgrade for folks that already ponied up the big bucks to play it originally. I think that's a stand-up thing to do. I'm glad to hear it. But there is some other stuff, interesting stuff about this. You know, they have a release date January 19th of next year. So quite soon, just a couple months from now at this point. And it's got some new stuff in it. Not only are you going to get your expected native 4K output for the fidelity mode, your variable refresh rate, your increased level of detail, improved shadow quality, all the visual stuff you might expect upgrading to the newer console. But there's going to be some extra modes, which I did not anticipate. One of them, which is called No Return, is going to be this roguelike survival mode with randomized encounters. One of them will be a guitar mode.
Yeah.
With a bunch of unlockable instruments, which they are even letting you use audio effects pedals to modulate your performance.
You can really rock out as Joel.
I guess. I mean, I think it's Ellie in the second one that plays guitar most in this one. But maybe I'm not remembering correctly, but I remember playing it as Ellie in that sequence. But yeah, it was kind of a fun little mini game letting you play guitar. And I guess they're just kind of blowing that up and make it into a full mode free play mode. And then it's got some new lost levels, playable sequences that were cut from the game, which is, I think, pretty darn cool. And then a director's commentary with Neil Druckmann and narrative lead Haley Gross and Troy Baker, Ashley Johnson, and Laura Bailey, the three leads. That's pretty cool. So what do you think, Adam, of the extra stuff?
You know, I think it's a pretty decent package, especially, like you said, for folks who have already bought into the game. Like, that seems like $10 well spent to me. And then I just am a sucker for like the DualSense controller. So I'm interested to see like what they pack into there. I get such a kick out of playing on my PS5 and just all the little bells and whistles that controller manages to make the experience so much more immersive. And of course, you know, like faster load times, things like that. I'm just really excited. I think this is definitely a title worth getting back into. Like I said, I was already planning on replaying it again once things kind of calmed down with the new releases, and this is just optimal timing for me.
Very cool. I mean, I this is a game that I remember finishing and going, I loved that experience. I never want to do that again. So I don't know how much I'm going to leap.
That's fair. That's fair. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah. It's an emotional ringer that you put yourself through playing part two. Anthony,
yes.
Christian's not here. So yes. You know, I'm sure this would have been his story of the week, or he would have had very strong things to say about this. I'm wondering how you feel about this package.
Well, in some ways, I feel like I need to be Christian and be the most excited, but I feel like I am the least excited. I'm just going to make him mad from home when he's listening. Hi, Christian. I should say Last of Us Part 2, I really, really like. I actually was not as high on Last of Us 1 as a lot of people. I felt the stealth was a little cheap. You know, you would sneak up on something, it would turn around at the last minute. But I thought a lot of the changes they made with the second one, as far as you know, being able to sort of subdue the clickers more easily or without having to worry about crafting. So I liked a lot of the changes, and I ended up really, really liking Last of Us Part 2. I reviewed it for Game Rant. I gave it 5 out of 5 stars. I really, really liked the game. So anybody that wants to play the game, I think what they're offering is great. I guess my main criticisms are two. One, this is a franchise that has more remakes and remasters than actual releases.
that's true.
Amazing. Yes.
And two, you're remastering a game that is apparently not done, or supposedly not done. You know, there's still like more pieces, or at least we assume the multiplayer component.
Right.
Is not done. So I don't know. It feels weird. It's like this game is what, 3 years old? I don't know. It feels a little weird to me.
I don't disagree with the weirdness. I think it is odd. It seems awfully quick for a remaster. I understand that they have a whole new, you know, whole new console that this wasn't designed for, and they want to put the crown jewel on the new console. I get that. And it can be, you know, prettier, smoother, quicker load times. All that's nice. I'm a little skeptical about these these new modes, you know?
Like, yes.
It's hard to complain about more stuff, right? If you don't want the new mode, ignore it. What's to complain about? I get that. I'm not necessarily complaining about it. I just it's an odd – this game is one that I don't go, you know what I would love? A roguelike survival mode.
Mini games.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and maybe it's awesome. Maybe it plays really, really cool. But it feels kind of dissonant to me to match this particular franchise, which is so much about the emotional ringer and the story and the experience of being with these characters with, you know, die, come back, play it again, die, come back, see how far you can get.
100%. You
know, it seems a little weird.
You know, it's interesting, and I think I'm kind of coming at it from a different angle where I'm a huge Naughty Dog fan, just full disclosure. Like, I love this studio. And I'm a guy that, you know, Uncharted had a multiplayer mode and everybody loved it. And I always thought that was weird. Mm. And then the original Last of Us had, you know, the factions. And I always thought that was weird. So I'm kind of used to just kind of like taking the piece of the pie that I want out of these games and accepting the things that might not be for me, but they're there. So maybe that stuff doesn't bother me as much as it might other people. But I certainly see your guys' point.
Yeah, it's more so the fact that like, remaster implies this game has been out, it's been completed, you know, like there's been time and distance between it and, you know, conversations about other games. And it feels like we haven't shut the book on this era of Last of Us. We haven't moved on. They've sort of hinted that maybe there's a part three or whatever it is, but it feels like we're not done unless the factions really is just canceled. One, there's Bloodborne out there where everybody's like, Sony, please remaster Bloodborne. They're like, how about we remaster this 3-year-old game? And two, there's a lot of games that they, you know, put a little time and effort into, Ghost of Tsushima, for example, and just said, here's the PS5 quote unquote version. And this is, no, we're going to sell you a version.
Yeah.
And it feels weird.
True.
Yeah. I mean, I think. I'm less inclined to criticize it because they gave the upgrade path thing. It's not a true double dip. It feels like they're really trying to give people that have never played this before the best possible version, especially in light of the show, which seems to have, you know, probably, you know, if you just got a PS5 and maybe you saw the show and you haven't played, I don't know. I think there are probably folks for whom this will be the first time they play it. And it's cool that 100%. It'll be the coolest version. So, you know, I'm not poo-pooing it necessarily, but I'm definitely in your camp a bit, Anthony, of feeling that it doesn't,
I mean, even the remake felt like, whoa, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
We're remaking part one is like, wait, what time is it? What year is it?
What time is it? Yeah. No. Yeah. Very, very good point. Well, there you go. January 19th, it's coming out. And if you want to re-experience it like Adam does, then it only cost you $10. That's pretty cool. Anthony Taormina, what is your story of the week?
Game Awards nominations. They're here. It's happening. Yes. It's the end of the year. The nominees are out. We've been spending all year saying this is the greatest or could be the greatest year of game releases. And now we've seen how some of that has shaken out. So what didn't make the cut? What did make the cut? Surprises, snubs, what have you? Yeah, it's exciting times.
Another way you know that Christian Spicer isn't here. We're going to talk about the Game Awards nominees. Christian doesn't like talking about the Game Awards. Yes, so we got lots of categories. We got lots of Jeff Keighley. We got the top games of the year. We got six nominees for Game of the Year in the prestige category of Game of the Year. They are Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Marvel Spider-Man 2, Resident Evil 4 Remake, Super Mario Brothers Wonder, and The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Anthony, we're just starting with Game of the Year, the biggest category.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that slate?
Okay. Well, first, I must preface everything I say about the Game Awards by saying Game Rant is a voting outlet.
Mm-hmm. So, right.
we have helped decide these nominees. So some of the, like, I don't want to like necessarily tip our hand or also not talk about like the behind the scenes process. Just want to say that up front.
Yeah. Fair
enough. That being said, this is a great set of games. I think in my mind, I know what I think will probably end up winning. It doesn't necessarily mean it is what our outlet is going to vote for, but it's what I think will end up winning. But also some surprises. I'm surprised Starfield didn't make the list.
I think that's the most notable sort of big prestige game that's not here. And I think that's a bummer. I mean, obviously, this is a jam-packed year with a lot of really, really, really good games. And it's hard to pick six. I mean, we're going to, you know, you're going to be with us, Anthony, at the end of the year. We're going to each have to pick only five. Now, I already am having a hard enough time narrowing down to five. Here's six, which is not much easier. And I personally probably would not have put a remake on here, Resident Evil 4 remake, although, you know, everyone seems to have gone gaga for it. I haven't played it, so it's unfair of me even to say that. But I think that's the one that I think.
To me, yes, I agree with you. Yeah. I agree that swapping that out for either Starfield or Final Fantasy 16 would have made sense. I know not necessarily for you, but I think given the other things it was nominated for, it kind of feels not included. Same with Starfield. So one of those in place of Resident Evil would have made more sense to me, but I also really, really like Resident Evil 4 Remake. So I'm not saying that's not deserving of being here.
Right. Do you, without tipping your hand or making any inference as to what your outlet is voting for, et cetera, is the one that you think will win, is that Tears of the Kingdom? Is that your guess?
It is Baldur's Gate, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think that would
be a good winner.
Taking myself out of it, taking the voting outlet out of it, I think, you know, Breath of the Wild already won. So I think that is the other front runner. I think it's probably a, you know, if we're saying horse race, probably three horse race between Tears, Alan Wake, and Baldur's Gate.
Yeah,
that's what I think Baldur's Gate is. I think so many people appreciate what it has done as far as like being a kind of genre defining or maybe genre evolving entry in a franchise that not to say that Tears of the Kingdom doesn't do a lot of incredible stuff, but I do think just Baldur's Gate's sheer ambition and the way it kind of came about, you know, obviously Nintendo is Nintendo. So they have two games on this list.
Right.
I would expect Baldur's Gate 3.
Interesting. I want to dig into some of the other categories as well, but Adam, I want to get your reaction to the six Game of the Year nominees. How do you feel about this list?
I am a small fish in the content creator sea, so I have a very limited play time, especially being the mega dad implies I don't have that much time to play. This list says to me, I really want to play Alan Wake 2, and I'm kind of bummed that I haven't had the opportunity to do it yet. I'm really looking forward to playing that game. And B, I think I have the most outlying opinion of Tears of the Kingdom of anybody in the world. That game just did not do it for me. And I loved Breath of the Wild. Like, I was huge into Breath of the Wild. But Tears didn't do it for me very much.
Interesting.
It's certainly a interesting, diverse slate. I didn't play Starfield, but I'm also surprised that isn't on there just because it's been a couple years, it seems like, that Xbox has had a marquee game on this list. And really, from the outside looking in, I thought that would be present there. So,
yeah. And it was a huge hit. People seemed to like it. It had high review scores. It's kind of weird. There's been a bit of a backlash against it. And I don't know what to attribute that to exactly. But I think that there was some celebrating that Starfield didn't get a nom. Yeah. At least I saw that online.
There was celebrating, but then also like commiserating. There was this concept that was going around, I don't know if you saw, called the Xbox tax, where they were basically saying like, this is what we're paying for not getting Starfield nominated for stuff so that we can buy Activision Blizzard. This is the Xbox tax that we're paying.
So that it doesn't look like they're a monopoly. Like, look, we don't even have a game in the Game of the Year nominees.
Whatever they're trying to reason. I do think that it does fit. Like, I don't think it's as like mid-level as a game, as some people say, but.
The idea it's mid is so insane. I mean, yes. It's an incredible game. it's like so deep and so dense. And does it look as good as Marvel Spider-Man 2 or Alan Wake 2? No, but if that's all you're judging it on, then I think you're pretty short-sighted. I agree.
I was surprised.
Let's talk about some of the other categories. I thought interesting that, you know, Best Narrative added Phantom Liberty in there and Final Fantasy 16. But again, no Starfield. I think Starfield probably worthy of a best narrative, in my opinion. I think story-wise, there's so many stories in it. I'm a bit surprised. Obviously, you know, there's some odd things like Destiny 2 getting best community support after all of their community supporters got laid off.
So I will say maybe the voting cutoff was before the people were laid
off.
Certainly
possible, yes. It's still not a great look for that.
No, absolutely not.
You know, somebody pointed out that best independent game, Dave the Diver, not an independent game. I think Dave the Diver is a phenomenal game, but not technically an independent game. And it kind of points to the fact that independent is often just a euphemism for not AAA, you know? Doesn't really mean it comes from an independent studio necessarily. It means it comes from it's just the game itself is a bit smaller in scope.
Or it's art style or things like that. Yeah, 100%. I think that's a fair debate to have. I think at the same time, maybe the conversation will steer Jeff and the powers that be to change maybe some of the categories.
Yeah. I think the best independent game nominee list is pretty solid. Cocoon, a game I absolutely love. I love Dave the Diver. Dredge is awesome. Sea of Stars is phenomenal. And Viewfinder, so cool. The five really excellent smaller games. I could probably come up with 5 or 10 that you could swap in and out, and I'd be perfectly happy. Just because it's been such an incredible year of even smaller, more independent titles. Yes. But what did you think, Anthony? Best independent game category?
Yeah, no, I think a great set of five games. If you're looking for, you know, you're in that group that says, I want these games that don't get enough attention, or maybe, you know, do something a little different. All five of these games are really excellent. Yeah. Same in best debut indie game. I think all those games are well worth playing. Yeah. And I would also give a shout out to the games that are in Games for Impact. Those are also some really, really, really great games that are worth playing.
Which is another one of those kind of hard to define categories for me. Like, you know, the Games for Impact are A Space for the Unbound, Chance of Senar, a game I love, Goodbye Volcano High, Chia, Terra Nil, and Venba. So I like that, you know, we're highlighting games that are kind of doing something different, but I don't know what the phrase Games for Impact means particularly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would like to say, Jeff, for you as a listener who listened to you talk about Final Fantasy many, many, many times, in the best RPG category, Final Fantasy 16 is in there. So solved. Case solved.
But so is Lies of P.
Case solved. Case solved.
I think the fact that Lies of P is in there just makes the whole thing, like, it means nothing. Now it means nothing. It means nothing that Final Fantasy 16 is in the RPG category, because Lies of P is not an RPG. Right?
I mean, is it though?
I mean, evidently
you can put the points into the stats,
I guess.
And you can pick your weapon, you can pick your build. I don't know what defines it. All I'm just saying is Final Fantasy 16 is in there, so it's an RPG. We're done.
Case closed. Yes, Baldur's Gate 3, Final Fantasy 16, Lies of P, Sea of Stars, love to see that, getting best RPG nod, and Starfield getting its nomination in there as well. I think the best fighting game category is actually, you know, going to be pretty interesting to see Mortal Kombat 1 against Street Fighter 6, and of course, God of Rock, Nickelodeon, All-Star Brawl 2, and Pocket Bravery. I don't know. Any other things that you guys are interested in here? Adam, anything you want to pull out that's interesting?
I think the most interesting thing is that I have been a huge RPG fan for my entire life. It is really the genre that got me into playing games. And as listening to you two talk about it, I don't know what an RPG is.
Right.
I don't know how to define it.
At this point, everything is an RPG and nothing is an RPG. Yeah. You know, it's everything is and nothing is. It's hard to.
I don't know. It's just kind of it's weird. You know, I've heard you guys talk about the Game Awards every year, and it's always an interesting conversation because it's a hard it's a hard thing to kind of define. Like all these genres are kind of, they kind of blend into each other. What should be there? What shouldn't be there? What does this category even mean? But the whole thing is just kind of problematic and hard to really define. Yes. Right.
We have best action game and best action adventure game.
If I were a voting outlet, would be a very difficult set of categories to decide between. I've always looked at it as like action is more combat focused and then action adventure has more traversal mixed in with that. But yeah, you end up with this situation of like, well, what kind of traversal are we doing? Is it just walking or am I jumping? And then am I jumping enough? So like you have Armored Core in best action game, but you do spend a good amount of time flying and zooming around in your mech. So
yeah, all this to say, I'll be tuning in for the trailers.
Well, so say we all.
If there's a Grand Theft Auto trailer, I'm sure everybody will be tuning in.
So say we all. I did like seeing Hi-Fi Rush get some love, which I think was pretty cool.
Oh, I want to play that so bad.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. And I want to mention the best VR AR game category. I thought really solid list of games. I mean, obviously we had new hardware launch this year, so you're going to get more titles. But Gran Turismo 7. Humanity, which is just an amazing game, Horizon Call of the Mountain, Resident Evil Village VR mode, and Synapse, all of those great, great games. And then I guess the last thing I'll mention is the fact that best ongoing, Christian wanted me to mention this, by the way, because he was texting me, best ongoing game. He thinks it's pretty weird. You have Cyberpunk 2077 as an ongoing game. It's like, what do you think about that? I mean, it got an expansion. Does that mean it's an ongoing game?
If I were a voting outlet, I might have acknowledged the fact that in the last few years, best ongoing game have included these other four games. And maybe I was looking for some other stuff that did new things.
Fair enough.
And not just putting Destiny in that slot.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, we will be tuning in. In what, 2 weeks, I guess it is, watch
December 7th.
December 7th, to watch the Game Awards and see who. I'd love for our listeners to tell us, maybe in the Discord, which Game Award nominee you're rooting for best game of the year, or even in any other category. And if there was any major snubs or games that you wish you could have seen on the list that did not show up. But man, what a year. What a year for games, and I hope that the award ceremony does them justice. All right, my story of the week, fellas. You know, we talked about a remaster, re-release update happening a little too soon. Here's one, I would argue, waited a very respectable amount of time. We got news this week from Valve that its debut title, Old Half-Life, the original Half-Life, is getting a 25th anniversary update to commemorate the 25th anniversary of Half-Life, which A, means two things. One, I'm very old. Mm. And two, I am very old. The update, this is super cool, I think. So they're making sure the game plays great on modern PCs. By the way, it was released in 1998, hence the 25th anniversary. They're working with the renderer, making sure everything works with modern widescreen monitors and resolutions, and you're going to have UI customization, scaling for higher resolution monitors, all the stuff you want for an older game to be able to work great on modern hardware. But also they're kind of going above and beyond and adding lots of really cool nostalgia stuff, honoring the game in certain ways, just kind of like elevating it to the status that it has always, you know, occupied, which is one of the great seminal games of all time. It's going to have a mini campaign, which was originally released as a CD exclusive for magazines and hardware manufacturers, which shows you how long ago this was, called Half-Life Uplink. It's going to come out. It's going to be released with some new multiplayer maps and also restored content that had been taken away, like the old classic Valve logo video and original music. It's going to have reskinned menus to match the original 1998 build. There's all kinds of sort of Easter eggs and cool stuff. Content from Half-Life Further Data, which was a retail disc released in 1999. Just like a treasure trove of just old stuff. You know, it's kind of honoring this game that meant a lot to all of us when we played it back in the olden days. And it's also going to be certified to play on Steam Deck. So, and support controllers. So I just think this is super cool. I love how Valve seems to take the responsibility to be the sort of, you know, the shepherds of PC gaming history in at least in this regard. And I think in even a grander sense, I feel like they are trying to do things that elevate the medium and respect the, you know, days gone by. And sure, this is their title. And of course they're going to reap the benefit of it. And, you know, it's self-serving in some sense, but I think this is a really cool way to honor the history of video games. And I'm excited to take another crack at Half-Life. I've played it. I can't even tell you how many times, but Adam, what do you think? Half-Life 20th anniversary update.
Well, first of all, I'm ready to turn in my gamer card right now because I have never played a Half-Life game.
Neither of them?
None of them.
Wow.
I know. Don't hate me. Don't kick me off the
show. I'm just surprised that it's, you know, it's one of those franchises, you know, even the second one, surprised you weren't, I feel like you were already kind of doing stuff when the second one came out. No,
I think it's, you know, everybody's got that blind spot game that like, please God, don't ask me if I've played Half-Life, you know, and of course on the show where we're talking about Half-Life. It's just one of those games. It's one of those franchises that has passed me by. I just have never had the opportunity. It never landed. That being said, I absolutely adore all of this like video game heritage preservation initiative. Anytime they re-release a game with like a boxed set, I've got like the Super Mario Brothers All-Star 25th Anniversary Edition that they had on the Wii. I love that stuff. Put it in a soundtrack or an art book, commemorate it some way. Any way that we can really preserve the icons of gaming history and not just like keep them around for people to play, but really spotlight the games that meant something to the industry, the games that moved things forward. And obviously, despite the fact that I've never played it, Half-Life is certainly one of those franchises. Even I recognize that. And hey, maybe this is an opportunity for me to actually play it. So I love this. This is super cool.
I think it's they're not even barely even charging for this. It might be free. I can't remember. Do you remember, Anthony, seeing if this was this new Half-Life update?
I believe you're right.
Yeah, I think it's free to play this Half-Life. So, you know, if I can tell you one thing that might tempt you.
Or actually, I should say Half-Life. They're giving Half-Life free.
It's completely free. Yeah, you don't need to have owned it. Yeah,
I think as of Monday, the 20th. So if you're listening to this the day it came out, go get it.
ASAP. Yeah. Yeah. And Adam, I was going to say, you know, if there's something I could do to tempt you, it's that this version of Half-Life will have animated water.
Oh, man.
Previously unavailable. The water will move.
but is there a free guitar mode? that's what I need to know.
That's a good question. No, Half-Life meant a lot to me at the time. It was a huge, huge breakthrough in what was possible in first person games in general. It represented a quantum leap forward in storytelling and how you would play. I don't know if it's still that important because everything does that now. Half-Life 2, though, I think is still just as revolutionary as when it came out, which is amazing because I think it came out in, what, 2005 or 6, something like that? Yeah, so I don't know if Half-Life will hold up if you're coming to it for the first time, Adam, but I can certainly recommend – you don't even have to play the first one. Just jump right into Half-Life 2. Half-Life 2 is still so excellent.
Yeah,
I will say, I don't know if this means anything to you. Probably not. Great VR mods. You can play both Half-Life and Half-Life 2 in VR. And they
I've just been waiting for what is it, Alex? Half-Life Alex? Yeah. I'm just waiting for that to get announced on PSVR. I'm a PlayStation guy. I don't know
why that hasn't happened yet. It's really bumming me out. We're getting up to my reckoning with the the predictions. They got to announce that soon. I'm not going to get that one right. Anyway, so there you go. Get if you've never played Half-Life, you know, free as of the 20th.
Check Chan it out. You was free.
20th anniversary. Find out what's – and I think Keeley – speaking of Keeley, this story meshes together all our other stories because, you know, Keeley famously did the final hours of Half-Life back in 98. He wrote this article, and I think – somebody found it. Like he didn't have it. It had been taken off the internet and somebody found it. And I think he's re-releasing it to coincide with this 25th anniversary thing. So there you go. Get your Keeley, get your Half-Life, and then watch the Game Awards. Yeah.
There's also a good, documentary. The people that do NoClip.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
They I guess spun off or they have another, a company called Secret Tape, and they made a documentary. It's super good. It has a great Gabe Newell quote that will, in my mind, replace the Miyamoto quote about the, you know, the a delayed game is eventually good, but a rush game is forever bad.
Right.
His quote, Gabe's quote, is just delayed is for a little while, suck is forever, and it's so good.
Awesome. All right, well, there you go. That's the news. Let's get into the games that we have been playing. But first, I need to tell you about our sponsor, which is Uncommon Goods. I don't know if you have noticed, ladies and gentlemen, but the holidays are coming. The holidays are coming faster this year than ever before. I've been blindsided by how fast the holidays have arrived. But good news... you don't have to panic if you haven't started your holiday shopping, if you haven't even thought about it, because Uncommon Goods is here to make your holiday shopping stress-free. Why? Well, Uncommon Goods did what I should have done probably, which is scour the globe for the most remarkable and truly unique gifts for everyone on my list. Yours too! Whether you're shopping for mom, dad, teenagers, in-laws, your best friends, it doesn't matter. Uncommon Goods knows exactly what they want. Let me tell you about some of the cool stuff I have found on Uncommon Goods. How about the Ultimate Gamer's Cookbook? Recipes for an epic game night. A collection of 50 gamer-themed eat-with-one-hand snacks to keep you in the action, keep your dice rolls clean, and your stamina stat maxed out. What a cool idea. What a great gift for the gamer in your life. And maybe just for yourself, if you want to have cool game night, cook something up. What a cool thing. Another one I saw that this is just, if you are of a certain age like I am, and you've been a geek for a long time, if you've been a nerd for a long time, if you've been a PC gamer since the days of Half-Life 2, or Half-Life Original, I should say, the 90s, I found on Uncommon Goods upcycled floppy disk notebooks. These are 3.5-inch, no, I guess it's 5.25, yeah, 5.25, 3.5-inch floppy disks, which, if you recall, weren't very floppy. 3.5-inch floppies were the hard ones, you know, with the copy protection that could toggle on and off in the corner. Anyway, somebody has taken those and turned them into notebooks, little awesome little notebooks. I mean, this is handmade. It's clever. You get a pack of three And what a fun gift to give to somebody to make you know that I know that you know that I know that we both remember these relics of old technology. Very, very fun stuff. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of what is available on Uncommon Goods. And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. The products are often made in small batches. You want to shop now before they sell out for the holiday season. And Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the United States. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. From art and jewelry to kitchen, home, and bar, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. Not the same lackluster gifts you could find just anywhere. Uncommon experiences are more than virtual classes. They're unexpected opportunities to have fun and connect in new ways, from tarot card reading, romantic map making, cooking and mixology classes, and more. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back a dollar to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $2.5 million to date. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/DLC. That's uncommongoods.com/DLC for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this
week? Tell us on the playlist.
Adam, I threw a game under the bus a little bit during our discussion on the Game Awards, and you have been playing it.
I have.
I have not, but Resident Evil 4 Remake is on your playlist. What do you think of it?
Yeah, it's like, go, Adam, defend it.
Yeah, tell me how I'm wrong.
Well, I'm glad that I'm on this episode where we're representing like old games, right? And it's like remasters, yeah, sure. Recognizing old games. I remember very vividly.
Age recognize age.
Yeah, yeah. As I rub my lower back, I need my heating pad. But the games that have meant a lot to me in my life, I have these just vivid memories around playing them. And I can remember playing the original Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube. I just remember it clear as day. And I think that these Resident Evil remakes, I'm a big fan of the franchise. I think these Resident Evil remakes that they've made have just been absolutely superb. It really takes that idea of when you look back on a game and the way your mind remembers it, how great it was. But if you go back and play it, it's like, oh, well, the controllers are kind of crappy and the graphics are a little jank. But these Resident Evil games, these remakes, do such a good job of taking your mind's eye and putting it on screen. And Resident Evil 4 Remake is really a great embodiment of that. The RE engine is fantastic. Graphically, this thing is just amazing. The monsters are sick and gross looking, and the environments are dark and dank, and really you see the shadows casting of things around the corners. It's just graphically, the fidelity wise, it's phenomenal. The other thing is this game is scarier than I remember. I don't remember.
It helps when everything looks disgusting now and realistic.
Yeah.
It's even scarier.
It actually looks like it might rip my face off.
Yeah.
It was something that I don't recall having, because Resident Evil 4 is really the game that kind of pivoted this series into more of like an action combat game. But boy, this remake has given me more than a few jumps, which kind of plays into the fact that My tip for anybody who goes into playing these games, especially if you're a person who is kind of timid when it comes to horror games, throw these suckers on easy mode. Yeah. I've been playing all of these remakes on easy, and it really leans into that action hero badass feel that you get when Leon has his shotgun slung over his shoulder and he's got a rocket launcher and his bulletproof vest. And this game is meant to give you that feeling of empowering the horror over the horror, like really growing into your strength. A lot of these horror games are all about the scares, but Resident Evil always has that ramp up of you start out just running for your life. But by the time you hit that midway point towards the end game, you are just stocked and loaded and ready to blow the crap out of everything that gets in your way. So throw this on easy. It'll make it less scary. It'll make you feel more empowered, and it'll seem more like an action movie, which I think Resident Evil 4 is kind of superb for. The other thing I want to say about Resident Evil 4 is just how genius the economy is in this game. So much of Resident Evil has always been about, you know, trying to stock up on your ammo and your health, and you're really trying to hold on to as much as you can and get through by the skin of your teeth. And this game throws in this treasure element where you're hunting through the maps to find all these treasures that you can trade in for new ammo or new health or new weapons. And it really gives this new dynamic of how are you going to survive? And you can invest in the tools that you think will be best suited for that survival. So you level up your weapons and you level up your body armor. And it's just a masterful balance as you go through this game of scares and action and investment in the character. Maybe it's an RPG. Who the hell knows at this point? But I really love it. I've been holding on to it. I got it on sale a few months back, and I've been wanting to play it, and this was the perfect opportunity. I wanted to play it before the end of the year so that I could really get a good calculation on if this is Game of the Year caliber, and I am just loving my time with it. So good.
You mentioned having a vivid memory of the first time you played it on GameCube. Mm-hmm. Is there anything in revisiting this game that has surprised you, has triggered memories that you didn't recall, you know, things that you didn't remembering?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of the bad side of the coin, is just like, oh my god, my memory is terrible. But I think they do, and I think all of these games do a great job of, like, it is the same experience, but they do a few changes and surprises in, like, kind of the order that things happen, or at least I remember them happening, so that, you know, certain characters reveal themselves at different points, and it's all still there. Some of the things are less hokey, some of the things are a little bit more hokey. It's kind of like a remix, right? So it's fun for a guy like me who remembers playing it, because there are some surprises in there. But overall, I just love the ability to go back to this game, kind of like how I was speaking before, in the best way possible. It's super accessible. It's available on everything. It's pretty cheap now. You can get it on a good deal. And it's just the best way to play one of what I consider to be the best action games of all time.
Action adventure, I think, technically.
Action adventure RPG. And a game for impact.
Yes, yes.
Independent game for sure.
That's Resident Evil 4 Remake, your indie game of the year. Anthony Taormina, you, as usual, are playing everything. And I'm so excited to hear about so many of the things on your playlist. Where would you like to start?
I don't know. I'm kind of sad Christian's not on here, because I have so many things to talk about that I sent him many text messages this week of things that I got in the mail, and he would tell me whether or not he was intrigued by them. I got my hands on a
Bed Bath & Beyond gift card. Are you intrigued
by
it?
This down comforter is right up your alley. Anyway,
15% off anything in the store.
Medical bills.
Yeah, but I mean I'll kind of let you guide me if you want, or right, I'll
tell you what I want to hear about first.
Okay.
And that's the Super Mario RPG.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm tempted to buy that myself.
It's very good.
Yeah.
I've been attempting to play it with my son. He's I think I mentioned on the show that we've sort of been able to play quite a few Switch games together. We did get him his own Switch Lite. It's a little more challenging for him. It's a little higher above his skill level because it's
lots of reading, right?
Well, yes, obviously the reading part, but it's the kind of timing. So I don't remember if the original Mario RPG had this, but when you attack, an exclamation point will appear. Mm-hmm. And if you hit the button at the same time as that appears, you'll get kind of a stronger attack.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if an enemy's attacking you and the exclamation point's up and you hit it, you can sometimes mitigate all the damage. Mm-hmm. So for him, the timing is just not there. So he's getting hit real hard and it's like, okay, we're dead. So I think that's a little challenging. It's maybe not for us to play together, or it's one of those where I play and he watches, which he does not enjoy. But for me personally, like, I think the game is incredible. Visually, very charming still. I love the design of Mario. He's a little different looking than a lot of the games. He's a very stubby, stubby little guy. And I think it's just such a fun adventure. Combat is very, I wouldn't say mindless, but it's simplified in a way that you're not like in traditional RPGs managing so many different things. You can kind of make your choices. You could maybe basic attack your way through it if you wanted to, but you do have the abilities on the various characters. You can also scan the enemies. I think it's called Thought Peak or something like that, where you look at what they're weak to, and then you can use magic and maybe exploit those weaknesses. I'm not super far into it, and maybe only a few hours, but so far what I've played has been great. I think if you remember the game, which I vaguely do, or if you've never played it before, I think it's well worth playing. It's just a different style of Mario game that's still super well made. It's very much in the Nintendo realm of, they gave me something I didn't know I wanted, and they did a great job, you know, not unlike like Mario and Rabbids or, yeah, not to say that that's a Nintendo, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they do something that's unexpected, and they do it so well that you don't really understand how they can just keep mixing genres and doing so well with all of them. But yeah, Mario RPG is great,
man. I might have to pick this up. I was trying I'm still, you know, my son and I are still working through Wonder, and he gets so excited when we find secrets and extra levels and stuff. And it, you know, we're still kind of knee deep in that, but man, I was like, I didn't want to tell him that, oh, there's another new Mario came out like 2 weeks later, a month later, whatever it is.
Yeah. I've been considering, so you can hold up to 3 saves. I've been considering, you know, popping onto the second save file and just playing by myself. because it is still a challenge for him getting, cause it's almost essential hitting that button press.
Yeah.
And he just can't get it.
Right.
But it's been super fun as far as like, there's some platform, not super platform heavy, but like some platforming things where you get some secrets and some puzzles. I assume that they were in the original game. Again, my memory is very, very foggy.
Yeah.
On it, but I have done nothing but enjoy every little bit I've played of it, and it looks very good. It doesn't look like you know, they phoned in the visual part.
That's awesome. Awesome. Super Mario RPG out now. All right. Let's talk next about Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, because that's a game I will not be playing.
Yes. And it's a game that I think most people should not play.
Wow. Straight up.
It is by far the worst campaign. I'm a campaign guy. I'm in that camp. I like the campaign more than the multiplayer. It is by far the worst campaign I've played Call of Duty, period. I think part of that is because, you know, there was those rumors of like, this was meant to be DLC for Modern Warfare 2, or this was, you know, rushed, or this or that. Whether or not those are true, it feels like it.
Mm-hmm.
So you play the first level and you think, okay, this is like a straight up traditional Call of Duty level. You're with your other guys. There's some crazy bombastic things happening. And then you get to the second level, and you go and there's a crate, and you open the crate and some armor plates come out and a weapon and comes out. And then you go, wait a second, am I playing Warzone or what's happening? And then you play the second level and you're parachuting into the level and then picking up crates. And it's like, oh, okay, you're just reusing DMZ/Warzone stuff. But then there are other levels that are more traditional Call of Duty and they don't have the armor plate stuff. It's very clearly like two sides of a different coin that have been like fused together in an effort to make a campaign.
Interesting.
I don't know. It did nothing for me. I wasn't engaged at all. It does have some familiar characters. It has your Makarov shows up, and some characters from the first Modern Warfare do show up. But yeah, it fell completely flat. I just didn't, they use those missions so much, and they're more like open areas where it's like, okay, here's an objective point, go however you want, but along the way, open chests, get better weapons. And then you go and you, you do that thing and then you run to the other side of the open area and you're not really what I like about the Call of Duty is, or the Call of Duty campaign specifically, is they feel like Michael Bay, you know, right. ratcheted Action up movie. You're yeah. doing, and there's not enough of that at all. It's very short, takes you about maybe 4 hours. When you're doing those open missions, it feels more like a co-op game or like the side stuff, not the campaign element.
Yeah.
I do think the multiplayer is solid. It uses a lot of the Modern Warfare 2 maps. So if you have that nostalgia for Modern Warfare 2 maps, I think the multiplayer is actually pretty solid. So I think you, if you're going in for that, I don't think you'll be too disappointed. But if you're like me and you're somebody that actually likes the campaign, I know that it seems like that's rare, but then so many people say it. And I think it's actually one of my favorite things about Call of Duty, but this is, it's very bad.
Man, that's surprising. I mean, I can't say it's disappointing because I wasn't going to play it either way, but I'm surprised because like you said, the Call of Duty campaign, for good or ill, has always been this hyper-focused, like moment to moment, super scripted, super crafted thrill ride. And the idea of them, I mean, I like the idea of them maybe trying to do something different, I guess, but it does sound like they didn't really have a clear vision of what that was.
Yeah, it's really weird. Even the ones that a lot of people aren't big fans of, like, was it 2 years ago, Vanguard?
Yeah.
Or the one that I think it was Black Ops 4, maybe, where they tried to, like, get back into the crazy paranoia Cold War stuff.
Yeah.
Even those, like, I didn't mind. It was kind of like, well, there's so few games that do what Call of Duty does that it's fun to, you know, jump into that campaign for a few hours every year. And then, this one I thought, they're crazy. You know, I'll give it a shot. And then that first mission, I thought, well, people are just looking for something different than what I am. Then I got into that second mission, picked up armor plates and said, oh, never mind. I see what everybody's talking about. I see what everybody's talking about.
There you go. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, at least the campaign. Sounds pretty disappointing. What about the new PSP?
PlayStation Portal, yes. I've got it. You guys talked about it quite a bit.
Christian bought one. I'm assuming I'll hear more.
No, Christian did not buy one.
He said he bought one.
When did you hear that he bought one?
Not too long ago. Did he tell you he did not buy one?
Him the picture of it, he said he canceled his pre-order.
Oh, he didn't tell me that.
So, yeah. So that he...
Listen,
yeah.
I bought the Quest 3.
That's
specifically
what I said to
because he bought the PS Portal, and he was like, whoa, hey, well, look, we're both throwing money away.
That's what I said to
and
him.
Now
he said, he's
completely,
I don't know you anymore.
Yeah. Completely bait and switched
me. I said,
me.
Jeff bought the... He said he was like, I don't need it. I don't need it. And I said, you don't need it, Jeff. And he still bought it.
That's right.
And then I said, Christian, you don't need this. You don't need this. And he was like, yeah, I actually had already decided I don't need it myself.
That is so not cool, Christian. So not cool.
Yes. So maybe next week he'll be able to tell the story. But yeah, I've been messing around with it. I think, again, you're either in to what the PlayStation Portal is offering, or it is a completely pointless device for you. It's just hard to reconcile, like, it being a middle ground device. You're either just super into the PlayStation 5 ecosystem. You like this idea of remote play so much that you want this dedicated device. It does work extremely well. It connects relatively fast. It's, you know, it doesn't have a lot of those sort of like, oh, well, I'm using my phone and I don't really know what's happening. It makes it really elegant to just connect directly to your PlayStation. Having the DualSense controller on either side of the screen is nice. I'm a big fan of the DualSense controller.
Yeah.
There are some weird things about it. Number one being it doesn't have Bluetooth. So if you want to listen to audio, you either are on just using the speakers that are on the device, which to me sound perfectly fine. But it, you know, if you're like in bed next to a partner or something like that, or you want to be quiet, you can use a wired headset, or eventually coming out is the Pulse Explore headset or the other PlayStation Link headset. I do have the Pulse Explore. They came with the PlayStation Portal from Sony. Hashtag provided by PlayStation. And those are the earbuds. They work extremely well. You can use them outside of the PlayStation Portal, and they are really, really good earbuds.
But they're not Bluetooth?
They do have Bluetooth. They have Bluetooth, and they have the Link. They actually do. Okay. They're one of those headsets that do both. So you can actually listen to like Spotify on your phone and your game audio if you wanted to.
Oh, cool. Get you a headset that does both.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get it.
But yeah, so it works well. It does everything you want it to do. So if you want this device, it works well. But I don't know who wants this device.
Yeah. I thought I knew somebody that wanted the device, but I guess I was wrong.
Well, yeah, I feel like this would have been more sought after if it came out alongside Spider-Man, where we were all like getting the platinum, we were all doing the side quests.
Yeah.
Now it's a little harder. We needed
to be in our bathtub doing that.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, it works.
Awkward pause.
Oh, sorry. I had to take a moment to cough. Apologies. But yeah, it's good. It's good.
All right. I mean, you can do all the stuff that it does with a phone.
With
right?
a phone, yes, 100%. So yeah.
It's weird.
If you have a really, really good phone with an OLED screen and a backbone.
Yeah.
Like Christian already does with the things that the PlayStation Portal does. So it's a little harder to justify, but I think there will be people, and there already are people. It's already out.
Yeah.
Who are saying, yeah, this is amazing.
Right.
And it does work really well. So it's,
yeah, my social feeds, pretty great. There's a lot of people praising this thing, and I'm the guy who is more than happy to throw money at PlayStation, but I look at this thing and I'm just confused. And I'm just like, I don't know. It's weird.
Is the screen nice? Is it like
it's a nice screen. It's not an OLED screen.
Right.
But yeah, it looks crisp. It looks clean.
Yeah.
I will say, like, performance wise, you really have to make sure your PlayStation is doing absolutely nothing. Like if you're downloading a game and then trying to do this, you will get the most pixelated picture you can possibly imagine.
Well, yeah, I don't think that's I mean, that's got to expect that.
Sure. I'm saying those people who are like, oh, you know, I want to use it as if it's like a portable PlayStation,
right?
You know, like at home I could start a download for the new Call of Duty and keep playing my save file of Spider-Man, and it would be fine. There would be no issue. This, because it connects wirelessly to your PlayStation, anything that your PlayStation is doing with its network beyond connecting to the portal is going to degrade the quality.
Hmm. All right. Well, interesting. Do you see yourself using it?
Yeah. To be honest, I'm waiting for a game, you know, I'm waiting for like a PlayStation game, like a Spider-Man. I already got the platinum, but like a game, it would have been great for that. Right. For me to just be able to go, I'm going to turn it on and I'm going to get like 6 spider bots real quick.
Yeah. But on January 19th, when
Last of Us Remaster
comes out, you'll be all over it.
Yeah. I'm going to be on the toilet making sure those fireflies pay.
Love it. all right. What else? What else is on your plate? You got so many things on here. What else is going on?
Okay. I got a Steam Deck OLED.
You did.
I did.
Oh, and is my Steam Deck garbage now?
So, you know your current Steam Deck that you have, and that I had one.
Yes, that I love.
Now imagine if the power button was red. No, I'm just kidding. So, I mean, it is the best version of the Steam Deck currently available.
Right.
There's no question about that. The screen is more vibrant. It supports HDR. The thing feels lighter. It says it's only like a few grams lighter, but it definitely feels lighter. Mm. There's a newer chip inside that has allowed for kind of more room for cooling. So it is much, much quieter. Like, you know,
that's
almost
a big deal. 'Cause the thing is not
whisper
quiet. Yeah.
100%.
My Steam Deck is quite loud.
Yes. No, absolutely. It's, This is runs cooler, runs quieter. So that's a big one for people.
Yeah.
The OLED screen is up to 90 hertz. So, you know, you can mess around with your frame rates and your power draw and things like that to either get more or less performance out of it and extend the battery life, which is better. You know, on the Steam Deck, I don't mess around too much with the settings, but I was lucky to get 2 hours. Now I can get, I think, closer to four.
Hmm.
Or that's mess cool. around with stuff and get closer to 5 or 6. Like, okay. Really pushing it if I'm, like, you know, playing a less demanding game and dropping it down to like 30 and dropping the performance down and then the power draw and everything. So yeah, it is without question the best version of the Steam Deck currently available. Do you need one? If you already have a Steam Deck, probably not.
Right.
Like if you're going to spend that money, obviously you could add a little more on top of it and get a more powerful handheld like a ROG Ally or right.
Yeah.
A Lenovo Legion Go.
It's cool that they updated it, but this is not, you know, a replacement for one you already have got. It feels like it's like, oh, it's slightly better.
Yes, it is. I mean, you know, like if you bought you specifically, Jeff.
Yeah.
Who like got a Quest 3 and was like, this is better. I'm happy with my purchase. I think you'll be 100% happy with this purchase.
Well, I'm not doing this. By the way,
okay.
I did get a Switch OLED, not because I thought it was going to be better than my Switch, but because my Switch had been beat to hell by my children. So I was like, I'm gonna get myself a nice new Switch, and I can tell that it is a better screen, but it's not like, oh, I would never go back. It's nice. It's a nice thing. I would say the most compelling thing you said is the quiet part.
Yes.
You said the quiet part loud, and I was like,
it's true. It's true. Yeah. Because of that smaller chip, it allows it to be cooler and quieter.
That's the most tempting part. I mean, I still don't think it's like $500-$600 tempting, but it is very nice to not hear that airplane engine take off when I load up a demanding game. I think that would be nice.
Do you think I could get an OLED edition of my children?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Lovely.
If I we could like turn them down.
Yeah, I was gonna say I like the quiet part. Yeah. If you could have a slightly quieter child, that would be wonderful.
And they look great.
The problem is that version also has longer battery life.
Oh crap.
Which I do not want with my children. I want less
go to
battery.
Sleep. Go to sleep. Yeah, it is a weird thing of like, you know, you have these devices and you say, well, the battery life, but then, you know, you then have the kind of tech enthusiasts who want to mess with it. And they're like, yeah, it doesn't have better battery life. And it's like, well, yes, it's so hard to review these things because you can push them to the max and just get like 2 hours no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, battery life is so subjective. It's like, well, what game are you playing on? And then what are you asking of it to do? And yada, yada, yada. But yeah, but I think, you know, quieter, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
It is. Yeah, I'm, you know, there's, like I said, no question. It's the best version of the Steam Deck available currently until
I have a
Steam Deck 2.
Good friend who I was hanging out with this weekend who told me that he was going to be traveling. And so he bought a Steam Deck like 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
like
so they don't have like a hey whoopsie type of deal,
I
don't, do
I mean maybe I not that I'm aware of, but that's a bummer. And he was like, what? He's like, well, he told me he was listening to the podcast and he heard us talking about it, and he was like, well, if they upgraded it, then well, at least I got the less expensive one. He's like, no, it's the same price. Same price. He's like, come on,
and more storage. So.
Yeah, that's rough when you finally jump into the Steam Deck right before they announce the new one. Oof. What else is on your playlist?
Well, I mentioned it. I did also get a Lenovo Legion Go this week.
All right. You got lots of hardware. Everything. Yeah, you're Mr. Portable at this point.
I put
Jeff, so much hardware. Did you think I was lying?
No, I doubted it, and now I'm the wrong one. I sent
all these things to Christian, and that was the only one where he went, okay, let me know how it is. The other ones, he went, I'm good. Even the Steam Deck.
Really?
Yeah, Mr. I said, I feel like I don't know you anymore. Who are you?
Was the Lenovo, that was the one that's supposed to be even more powerful, right?
Yes, so it is, of the handhelds that I have used, it is the most powerful, but it's marginally so. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, like the Rogue Ally is right up there. This one's sort of the claim to fame is that it has sort of like the middle section can pop out the controllers a la Switch.
Right.
Or OG Switch.
And doesn't it have that weird, like, first-person shooter mode thing?
So it has a kickstand, and then it comes with, like, a little circular thing that I didn't even understand what it was. It looked kind of like a lens case with a hole in it. But it's like a lens case with a hole in it. And so the right controller, actually, the buttons are more towards the outside of the controller. So like on the Steam Deck, if you can imagine the Steam Deck, it has the two paddles like where your fingers rest.
Yeah.
And on the Legion Go, the left two paddles are still there, but the right ones are more where your palm would sit.
Okay.
Wrapping around the edge. But that's so that when you pop off the controllers, you actually turn the right one and you put your fingers where your palm would sit, kind of like a joystick or a flight stick.
Yeah, so your fingers are now in trigger position.
Yes, and you're almost like kind of like a HOTAS situation. If you wanted to use that. I haven't really used it. It was like, this is kind of fun, but is it super? But just being able to hold the controllers and then have the stand sit up or the screen kind of sit up would be nice, like for traveling on planes or something like that where you... Mm-hmm. Similar to the Switch, you know, it's like basically they went after the more powerful Switch approach. And it is more powerful. It is able to run a lot of games at like 40, 45, you know, lesser demanding games up to 60. It's a nice screen, very clean. Got the Hall Effect. It
runs Windows?
Joysticks. It does run Windows. It's similar to Rogue Ally or any of those. So you can – it has – sort of like the Lenovo's version of a kind of a hub. So, you can install Epic or Xbox and then you can kind of click on those or it'll store all your games in one central area. So if you wanted to play Forza from Game Pass, you could just click on Forza. It'll load up Xbox and then take you to Game Pass and take you there or load up Steam, play a game from Steam. Most of the handhelds do that. Some of them, you know, better than others. I haven't really encountered any issues with this one, but I'm sure I will. Every single one I've had or used that's used Windows has been sort of hit or miss because that's kind of the beauty of Steam Deck is it's kind of like a self-contained system. But anybody that you tries PC gaming, you know, sometimes you turn it on and it's just like, not today.
Right. Right.
Not today. I know yesterday or I know 5 minutes ago I was working just fine. Yeah. Not today. I'm not. Yeah. And then you turn it off and you're like, I'm going to bed. And you wake up and it's like, I'm good today.
Yeah. Sorry. Can't even.
That, I mean, that's what I've experienced. Plenty of that. But yes, it's I don't know which handheld to tell you to buy, unfortunately. You know.
Basically, what good are you, Taormina?
I don't know. They keep sending them to me, and I just say, yeah, I'll review it. So then I review them, and I'm like, I don't even know what to tell people. It's basically a little more powerful, but the battery life's a little less. So
it's also more expensive, right? It's like
it's also more expensive, but the controllers pop off. So does that seem neat to you?
So you haven't tried the like wacky joysticky?
Just a little bit of it, and it was kind of like. I don't want to, because you have to basically rest your hands. Like, that's the beauty of putting the screen on the table is, like, I can sit back.
Right.
But putting it, then it's like, well, why wouldn't I just put it back on the screen and rest my hands on a table or whatever?
Yeah. But it works. It, like, you feel like you can control the games with it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, it definitely works. It feels more like a gimmick, I guess.
Yeah.
But
It read like a gimmick when we first saw the announcement. I was like, this doesn't – are people clamoring for this way to control games? It feels like a gimmick. But
yeah, yeah, it just feels – you know, to be honest, there are so many companies doing the different things. It feels like, hey, we just – we wanted to be different. We saw what the Switch does.
Yeah, I get that.
I can appreciate that, and that's cool. If you said, which one should I get – I would say if you want the most powerful one, probably Rogue Ally. If you want the most like user-friendly one, Steam Deck.
Yeah. It is nice to be able to just natively go to Game Pass and stuff if you've got a Game Pass subscription. I think there are ways to get that on Steam Deck, but it's not easy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes, so having it be more PC-like and being able to like, you know, I don't just browse the internet, go to Netflix, still have a device that isn't as restricted as a Steam Deck is nice. But again, when weird stuff happens on the Rogue Ally, you're like, well, this is Windows at work versus, what was it like a few weeks ago? You had Jeff Grubb on and he said, the Rogue Ally keeps eating my armored core save.
Yeah.
And so like that's what you're dealing with. Whereas Steam Deck, I think, is less likely to do that.
Right.
But gonna give you less frames.
Sure.
So
I gotta get those.
Take frames. That as you will.
Adam, you said you were not interested in the PlayStation Portal. What about a? Do you have a Steam Deck? Or you covet a Steam Deck? Do you want a Steam Deck?
No. I if I'm not sitting on the couch, I am probably at karate. You know, or
humble brag
or something like that. So
if I'm not sitting on the couch, I'm probably breaking bricks and sticks.
Yeah, I'm doing man things, you know, going outside, looking at nature. No, gotcha. All of these things are just like, I didn't even know this existed, to be perfectly honest with you.
That's fair.
Fair enough. It's an interesting, it's a suddenly crowded market.
It's weird, yes. Right? Like all of a sudden, all the options.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other games you want to talk about, Anthony?
Well, I know there's a VR game, but I know you want to play the music.
I do.
the last game I'll talk about is Last Faith. I've said many times on the podcast, I'm a huge fan of the side-scrolly Souls-like Metroidvania type games.
Yeah.
This is one of those. I think this is a very good one of those. Blasphemous is one of my favorites. Obviously, Hollow Knight is a great one. It's got some Metroidvania elements. So you get different traversal abilities. You can get places you couldn't get before, but it has those souls like elements of you die, you respawn at a certain point, you have to fight the same enemies, you have to get your quote unquote souls or currency back, use that currency to upgrade your character, different stats, buy stuff. It's multi-purpose currency, so to speak, but also crazy bosses that have elaborate attack patterns where you're dodging on the ground or you're jumping in the air or maybe jumping and air dashing and kind of reading their attacks and then getting your own attacks in at the same time. It's my absolute favorite of those kind of like, I don't know, indie genre of games. And Last Faith, is the latest one. And I really, really had a great time with it. I highly recommend.
Sounds like a good game to play on your Lenovo handheld.
100%. Yes.
Yeah.
I recommended it to Christian. He said, I'm not interested. And I said, what? You're the Vania guy.
I don't like how often he's being referenced when he's not even here.
You know? That's true. That's true. Sorry. You know, I'm sorry. Apologies.
It's okay. No, it's fair. It's fine. But you know, he doesn't even bother to show up and he's getting all this name checking.
Well, I'm supposed to be, his spirit is trying to come through me and I'm forcing it back down.
Yeah, you're getting poltergeisted or you're getting possessed. Fair enough. Last Faith, thumbs up from Taormina. And you are an aficionado, as you said, you're an aficionado of these games. So that brings, I think, some.
Yeah, some listeners, have said like, you know, messaged me on Twitter or something like that and said, oh, you know, did you play this game? And no, I haven't. Thank you. Or they'll say, I'm looking for games like, I think it was Moon Scars last year. Mm. They're like, I had a conversation on Twitter about it. So those of you out there who know what I'm talking about, Last Faith is the new good one of those.
The new good one, Last Faith. Although I would like to play Last Face.
True.
Whatever that is as a game. That sounds fun. I was traveling almost all week. I kind of went on a retreat. And I'm sure I'll talk about that at some point. But I'm still playing Talos Principle 2 mostly. I look forward to talking about more games I have been playing next week as I am back and have time to dig into new stuff. I apologize for not having anything on my playlist. But I would like to use my time to hear about a game I am very excited about in VR Talk. You mentioned to me that you had an early copy of Assassin's Creed Nexus,
mm-hmm.
the new VR Ubisoft joint. Which yeah. I had heard surprisingly positive things about.
Mm.
And first, tell me which headset you're playing it on.
Quest 3.
Okay.
Played on Quest 3.
So untethered on Quest 3, right? Just standalone?
Indeed, yeah. Yeah. No, not from PC or anything like that.
Right.
I packed up my Quest 3. I drove up to Christian's house. I'm just kidding. So it's good. Everything you heard, it is. So
I'm so excited.
I had some finicky issues with the kind of climbing. When you played Horizon, the hand-holdy thing, did you ever have any issues? Or was like,
No, but there's a lot of VR games that do that. So I sort of know
okay.
what the deal is.
I had some of that. And the combat is a little dry or not exciting. It's very much the enemies are really like slowly telegraphing their attacks. So like guy with the axe pulls his axe back, 90 degree angle to the right, and he's gonna swing, so you have to put your sword up or whatever your right. weapon is to block there.
Yeah,
and you really can't hit him until you block, so it's a little kind of tedious there where you're like, let's come on, speed it up a little bit.
Mm,
but besides okay. that, it is a very good representation of Assassin's Creed. The way that they do the parkour is kind of just you hold a button,
mm-hmm.
you look where forward. I was playing mostly standing. I know you can play seated. Mm-hmm. I tried to go for as immersive as possible, and you're just holding forward and it will automatically jump over the gaps or kind of jump you up, and then you need to grab. It's got like a good just locomotion to it that feels very, very nice. Very Assassin's Creed,
Yeah, which is how it is on the console versions. Yeah.
It's super fluid. Climbing is as you would expect. You're using the grips of the Quest controller to grab on the edges. You're reaching up right hand to hold and then left hand to reach a little higher and then yeah. alternating.
Right.
You can sort of pull yourself a little bit. You can both hands and then kind of pull up and then let go to jump a little higher,
right.
which is pretty neat. It does have the signature leap of faith. You get anywhere where there's the like bay of hay bale.
Yeah.
I don't know why I was saying hail of bay. Hay bale, you spread your arms out and then it'll do it. It's a little, they're playing with fire here. I'm sure some people are going to nosedive. but yeah, you're supposed to like hold your hands out and then it just does it. I don't get nauseous playing it. So I didn't have any issues. I could see some people maybe run into issues, but it does have a lot of accessibility, a lot of like customization there. So
right.
I think if you do have issues, you'll be able to kind of tone it down or do different things. It like before you start doing the real missions, it does have a lot of menus and say like, what do you want to, like how comfortable are you with VR and what do you want to tune up or tune down? So I think it'll be great for that. But yeah, the movement is great. They're just like self-contained levels, but they're pretty large. Like the second level is Ezio's sort of home, Monte Rigioni.
Mm-hmm.
So you got lots of rooftops to climb up on, and just there are like sort of side missions where you most of them were like kind of traversal, like get through these different checkpoint gates within a certain amount of time.
Are you timed?
Yeah, they're timed. So like, well, but it's similar to stuff you would see in Assassin's Creed. It doesn't feel like they shortchanged you.
Okay.
On the Assassin's Creed stuff. A lot of talking. So if you're not super big on the lore or these characters, you might just be standing around. There were some points where I was like, okay, my feet are hurting at this point.
But it's cool, like, because you're, you know, it's one-to-one side. You're, like, in the room with the people. Yeah.
And then, in my opinion, the best part is, like, the stealth. Mm-hmm. You know, it has a lot of that good. You can just hit a button to crouch, or you can literally crouch and peek around a corner, pick up an item, throw it over there. The guy goes over to where the item is. You press a button on the right controller and sort of flick it a little bit, and your hidden blade comes out, and you take him out.
That's cool.
Feels Assassin's Creed. You can also do that from the air. Yeah, I think you'll love it.
I'm so excited.
If you like Assassin's Creed, even dating earlier, like you're not on board with all the stuff they do now, but you can see like, okay, this would actually work really well in VR. It does.
And as a standalone Quest 3 game, how does it look?
Not the best.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. It doesn't look the best. The characters, you kind of get up close, and the textures, it's not the best looking game. I'll be honest. It's not going to blow you away. It does. So your kind of presentation, your Abstergo element uses AR of like, oh, you're in a room with screens and stuff like that. And you can also see your room. The idea is like you're going into a virtual world in the same way you are going into a virtual world. So that's pretty neat. But visually, it doesn't hold up under like intense scrutiny.
Okay. Well, that's okay. I mean, it's where we are with VR stuff and standalone particularly, where it's a little, you know, it's
presumably the best looking VR Quest 3 game is right around the corner.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited for that. December. Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, I think you'll love it. I think you'll love it.
I'm super excited about it. I'll tell you that. I was not holding my breath that it was going to be any good, especially after they canceled the Splinter Cell one, because they were, you know, they announced both of these at the same time. Splinter Cell and Assassin's Creed were getting VR games, and they canceled one of them. I was like, ah, man, the other one's going to be shovelware. Watch. I'm really pleased to hear that that's not the case, and that it's actually good. So, are you at all tempted by this, Adam? At all?
I have an interesting relationship with Assassin's Creed, where I loved the original titles and I kind of fell off of it around Assassin's Creed 3. And I always thought, how cool would it be if they managed to do some sort of VR thing where they play with the idea of you getting into the Animus, right?
Right.
Like that just seems like such a natural fit. So I love the idea of this. And I recently got back into the series. I got a code for Mirage and I've been enjoying that quite a bit. But I don't have a Quest. So again, I feel kind of left out. But hopefully, I like to see the successes in VR, because the more successful it is, the chances of these games reaching other platforms increases. And I absolutely would play this for sure.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about it. Cool. There you go. Assassin's Creed Nexus, your VR game. And that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Adam Leonard, thank you so much for being here. It's always awesome chatting with you about games. Thank you so much.
You bet. It's always great to be here. Again, it's family time, so it's great to spend it with extended. It's a Friendsgiving. We'll say that. How about that?
Yeah, it was a Friendsgiving. That's a great way to say it. Tell folks, other friends, where they can follow you and all the cool stuff you do online.
Yeah, I am the editor-in-chief, the creator of Mega Dads. We are just about to head into our 10th year.
Wow, so we're congrats.
Very excited. We've been doing this a long time. It's me and a group of like-minded dads across the country talking about games, talking about the challenges of living as a middle-aged dork, trying to balance your game time with your family time. You can find us at megadads.org. or youtube.com/megadads, and socials, we're on Threads and Instagram at megadads. Please check us out for all of our shenanigans.
Very cool. Very cool. Anthony Taormina, thank you for being here. I appreciate you channeling Christian. I know that could not have been easy or comfortable.
You know, his jeans are tight.
We both know that's true. Yeah. And the mustache, just putting the mustache on.
Oh, yeah. Putting the mustache on, I just want to set fire to it.
Tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff you do online.
Yeah. So some of the things that I talked about, I'll do written write-ups of most of the handhelds specifically at GameRant.com, where I am editor-in-chief. Or you can just follow me on Twitter. I give recommendations in the gaming and pop culture space. My Twitter is at AntTaormina, AntTaormina.
And you can follow this here very podcast on Threads at DLC Hype Train on Threads. We got some cool updates during the week. We got the parts of the show, video clips on YouTube for you to enjoy as well. And of course, I mentioned our Discord where folks can hang out. You can follow me on socials. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. I have other shows. The Film Cast, talking about movies and TV shows. I think we're doing The Killer this week, the new David Fincher movie. And I also do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns with Anthony Carboni. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. And a sports show called The Fan Controlled Show. You can find that at Fan Controlled Sports and Entertainment. All right. Let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift.
Adam, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I sure do. And, you know, Jeff, once in a while I come on this show and I talk about a movie that I saw with my son that we both loved. And you'll be like, oh, yeah, we reviewed that one. We all thought it sucked. And what I did is this week, I made sure and listened to the Film Cast so that I could bring this movie here that I was very excited to talk about. And I know that you enjoyed it as well. I'm talking about The Marvels. I took my family to The Marvels. And, you know, the thing about taking your kids to the movies or really doing any sort of entertainment thing with your kids is it's so great that you feed off of their energy, right? The kids don't bring that baked in cynicism that life kind of pours on you when you're in your 40s, you know, and they haven't been broken by the world yet. They just love things that are cool. And we walked out of this movie and my son was just jumping out of his skin. He thought it was so much fun. We laughed. It was exciting. My daughter didn't fall asleep. It's just a good time. It's awesome, right? It doesn't have any of the weight or the seriousness. It's just a lean and fun and funny Marvel movie that we all enjoyed. The box office isn't doing so well, so I want to push it on people who want to bring their kids to just a really good action family film, and I think The Marvels is great for that.
I agree. It's really a shame to see how it is just absolutely tanking at the box office. $9 million it made the second week. It's just brutal. But it does not deserve that. It's very good, very fun, very entertaining, very, you know, you walk out of it with a smile on your face. I'm chagrined to see how poorly it is doing because it does not deserve that. You know, Quantumania deserved that.
Yeah.
But this movie, not so much. I second your recommendation for The Marvels. Anthony Taormina, what is your parting gift?
My recommendation is Scott Pilgrim Takes Off,
ooh,
which just released on Netflix.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of Brian Lee O'Malley's books, the Scott Pilgrim books, and then a huge fan, maybe they're neck and neck, of Edgar Wright's movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they announced, hey, we're working on a Netflix show, Brian Lee O'Malley's involved. Edgar Wright is involved. All of the voice cast from the movie, or pretty much all of the voice cast from the movie, is involved to voice the same characters. It's going to be animated. It's got Anamaguchi, who did the music for the Scott Pilgrim Ubisoft game, doing the music.
I thought this couldn't be more perfect. But we didn't really know what it was. And, you know, some people thought, oh, it's going to be an adaptation of Brian Lee O'Malley's books, so that people that haven't seen, you know, have seen the movie, who haven't read the graphic novels, can experience that story. Or maybe it's just going to be an animated version of the movie. It's neither of those things. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it goes places, and it is very, very good. And just getting to hear those people, Michael Cera, Scott Pilgrim specifically, is super fun. But yeah, if you're a fan of the Scott Pilgrim universe, and you're just kind of saying, well, they're just doing an animated version of something I already know, they are not, and you will be blown away by this.
So cool. I haven't had a chance to watch this yet. I might watch it after we finish recording tonight. Sure. Or at least one episode of it. Yeah. I'm so excited.
Yeah. So the first episode, you'll watch the first episode and you will immediately go, oh.
Awesome.
Oh, okay.
I'm very excited. Very excited. A great, great parting gift for that. I have a parting gift that's a little, you know, it's not a media thing. I took my son, who is 7, to his first hockey game, a live hockey game. We went to see the Colorado Avalanche in a hockey game. And I am not a hockey person. I am not a hockey aficionado. I like sports, but hockey was never, you know, I'm an American. I shouldn't say that. A lot of Americans like hockey. I'm not one of them. I was a California boy. I didn't have ice skating much when I was growing up. Whatever the case, I didn't get into hockey. I will tell you, I've been to 3 live hockey games in my life, and every time I go, I walk out saying, man, I could get into this. I could get into this sport. Anyway, decided just on a lark to take my son to see. I found the tickets to the Colorado Avalanche here in Denver area to be pretty reasonable, not too expensive. I think they were like $30 for, wow, you know, not great seats, but it really wasn't a bad seat in the house there at the Ball Arena. Downtown Denver. I got to tell you, it was a blast. We had so much fun. My son loved it. He's never really watched hockey. We don't watch hockey on TV, but it's just such a great live sport to watch. Just being in the building, it was so much fun. And he had a great time. I had a great time. And I recommend it. Even if you're not into hockey, if you're looking for something to do, if you're living in a city that has a hockey team, maybe take your kids. I recommend it. It was so much fun. That said, a lot of F-bombs in the crowd around me. You know? The hockey crowd. Yeah,
that's inescapable. I think no matter the
sport. They don't, yeah, I guess that's the world we live in now. You just can't take your 7-year-old into a public place without expecting to hear people just profane.
Yeah, same with a strip joint. You'd be surprised. You can't bring your kids into anywhere.
Yeah, they hear the worst language. That's the worst thing about it. Anyway, I recommend live hockey. That's my parting gift. We got a listener-suggested parting gift. This came to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It was sent to us by Jacob. Jacob writes, I'd like to suggest a tile-drafting board game called Planet. Each player is given a planet, a plastic 12-sided sphere with magnets inside. Each round, you flip over a stack of magnetic pentagonal tiles with terrains on them, usually multiple kinds on the same tile. Each person goes around taking and placing a tile on their planet. After a few rounds building up your planet, the later rounds start to score points based on shuffled objective cards laid out in a row at the start of the game. An example being biggest desert area not touching ice. The uniqueness, in my opinion, comes from the fact that since it's a sphere, the tiles wrap around and touch. So every segment matters and how you could have the biggest forest area by far. But if it doesn't meet that secondary requirement, you can't score it. It's easy enough for kids, but thinky enough for adults. And I feel it's a fun entry into the tile placement genre. Also, big thanks to Craving for a Game in Surrey, British Columbia, for recommending it to me so that I can pass that recommendation along to you. Well, thanks, Jacob. And thanks to the Craving for a Game folks. Planet. This is not a game I'm aware of. I have not played it, but I love a tile drafting and placement game in three dimensions.
That sounds cool.
In a sphere. Very, very cool. Thanks for sending that along to us, Jacob. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, send it to us. DLCfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. We love getting them from you. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Adam Leonard and Anthony Taormina for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for the fun bumpers. Thank you also to Jesse J. Anderson, who set up DLCswag.com, where you can buy cool stuff with our logo on it. Head over there. Check it out. We also need to thank our patrons, without whom we would not be doing this show. Thank you, patrons. We appreciate you. In fact, if you are a Hype Train patron, you get your own video game. And you know what? Christian is going to come back and help me do that. I'm joined once again by Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello. Happy to be here. It's my favorite part of the show, to be perfectly honest. I don't want to, like, you know, the other parts of the show are fun, but this has truly become my favorite part of the show.
Christian's new plan is to only show up at this point.
Yeah.
When we have to talk about games that we remember from a while back. And I know that you know that I know the Dan Flanagan game, because that was just so much fun. I mean, so there's games that go down in history as being, you know, seminal works and important. And then there's games that's just fun, you know?
Can I admit something? Maybe I shouldn't. You know that show, Our Flag Means Death?
Sure. I love that show.
What is that? You know what that show's about? Like the characters. What was that word again?
Pirates.
Yeah. So Dan Flanagan, I first played on the Dreamcast. And you might say Our Flag Means Death.
Let's just say you didn't purchase the game.
I mean, I did later because I found it so enjoyable and so fun. It's kind of like Bomberman in terms of, like, the gameplay loop is just so fun. But the Dreamcast also was so easily Our Flag Means Death-able, the games on it.
I hear you. Remember Bleem?
Yeah. Oh, anyway. Yeah. Bleemcast that's my first experience with Dan Flanagan. And then.
Oh, sure.
Now, years later, the amount of merch I own from it, I hope I've paid back my debt.
I hope so, too. But the thing I like most about that game is that you would play the levels twice, and you have to set up all your moves in advance, and then you go back and play it the second time. So it was Dan Flanagan's plan and plan again, right?
For me, it was often Dan Flanagan, plan again, plan again. Plan again.
Oh, you
ask
had to
your little
over
brother
over.
Yeah. How to do it again. But I like your humble brag that you were able to do it in two goes. I guess that explains your puzzle game prowess still to this day.
I loved it, man. I loved the mental gymnastics that you have to do about planning all your moves in advance, setting up all the tiles that you were going to move to, and then just watching it play out. And then, of course, seeing the failure, the inevitable failure, and have to plan it again.
And the quick load was great, especially back then on disc-based media. I don't know if they were able to preload the level in the background, but it was really awesome that you were able to kind of just jump back in, especially me as I was failing a lot, knowing that it wasn't going to be a long Dreamcast, you know, four-hour reload the level moment before I could try again.
You could, I remember even during the loads, you could play on the VMU,
oh,
you
know,
the
so
little
good.
Mini game on the VMU.
So good. So yeah. I would Flanagan right now again, if I could again.
If
you know?
We could, but then you'd have to, Our Flag Means Death it, I think, again, because it's hard hard to get hold of that game these days.
Bring it out for Steam Deck, the perfect Steam Deck game. Like, true. I think we're ready.
Also, you remember the game, the Riley Knox game.
Dude, what was the tagline? It was like,
Riley Knox rocks your socks.
I was going to say Opportunity Knox.
Oh yes, you know, no, that was what it was.
Fast.
You're right.
To because it was like those very like edgy '90s early aughts gaming. Like there were so many cringe gaming magazine advertisements back then, and Riley Knox was just not that, which felt very refreshing. It was like Opportunity Knox, or
Yeah, you remember
Knox, it was like a lot of
the old like Daikatana ad, which was, you know, John Romero will own you or whatever. There's like, it was like, oh, come on. Opportunity Knox was so much more sophisticated, elegant, you know, not, it doesn't talk down to me.
Yeah, I didn't need to have like my eyes being ripped out of my socket at like the blaring great wind burst of the, and it's like grotesque, yeah, and like everything, and like this game will kill your kids, and it's like, well, yeah, that seems a little much. What system did you first play it on? I'm curious your first experience.
I played it on PC first.
Oh wow, mouse, yeah, and keyboard.
Yeah, mouse and keyboard. I felt like that was the way to play it because it, I mean, it was a first person shooter, and you were breaking into Fort Knox. You know,
I mean, well, shooter is a generous way to put. I like. Yes, you had the gun, but a lot of it too was kind of not stealth per se, but there was more to it than just, no, especially, right, in the era of boomer shooters.
You're right.
I think it was refreshing.
Did you put all your points into stealth in that game and just sneak into Fort Knox?
Yes.
I have to admit, I went guns a-blazing.
Oh, wow. No, I was stealth and persuasion. So I'd get caught and then I would, you know, find my way to work my way out of it. But the hard part about that is because of that, I think my revolver, like two of the chambers were permanently blocked. It was like I found like an old decrepit gun. So if I did get into trouble, it was like, you messed up.
So for you, it was opportunity blocks.
I will tell you this, something else that rhymes with Knox, you know?
well, we my appreciate-
favorite bird, hawks.
Hawks, yes. There were that was weird how many birds there were in that rendition of Fort Knox. That was
when
very
you got to
strange.
The roof, you're waiting for the helicopter and all the hawks came trying to steal your socks, and all you could do was weird. Use your arms to blocks.
It was a strange ending. You know how the ending of Halo Combat Evolved, you're in the Jeep and you're just trying to escape? Well, it's kind of like that, except you were just fleeing from birds.
Well, when the music rose, kind of like in Halo, I mean, it rocked. Yeah. So
I don't understand why the birds wanted all your gold so badly, but you know, it was a different time.
We want your gold. Give me the gold.
Thank you to Dan Flanagan and Riley Knox for supporting the show at the hype train level. We are grateful. If you'd like to have your own video game created by us for you, get over there to patreon.com/dlcpod. All right. Thanks again for listening, folks. We'll see you next week. Have a happy Thanksgiving. And until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.